previous installment, we related how Rochel, the grandmother of the Alter Rebbe, the mother of Rav Baruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, related to her daughter Dvira Leah about her father. That means Rochel's father, who was known as Rav Baruch Batlan. Previous installment, we related some of the historical background of this Rav Baruch Batlan. And we continue now with a gripping tale which Rochel told her daughter Dvira Leah, which she had heard from her father, from Rav Baruch Batlan. And this happened when Rochel herself was a child of 2 years, in the year 1682. Baruch Batlan's family lived at that time in Poznan, Rochel's birthplace, and they lived in Portugal Street. The reason for the street being named thus was because the majority of its inhabitants had come from Portugal, having fled from the Spanish Inquisition. And you will recall that in the previous installment it was mentioned that Rabor Batlan's real name was Portugali or Portugaler, meaning that he came from Portugal. The street, Portugal Street, was beautiful, and the houses were very imposing. The house in which Rochel's family lived belonged to a certain goldsmith named Avigdor Tuvia and his wife Gitel. These owners lived in the same house, as also did seven other families, all fine, respectable, frum Jews. Her own family lived in this house for 30 years. The owner, Avigdor Tuvia, however, was not as fine a man as his tenants, and Avigdor Tuvia, the goldsmith, spent much of his time in card playing and also, sad to say, in drinking. He and his wife came to an early and sad end, and when they died and their apartment was vacant, it became occupied by even lower class people. The residents of the building began to hear wild screams and drunken laughter emanating from this apartment every night. The sound of jumping and dancing feet shook the place, for it was obviously being haunted by ghosts and demons. The noise became absolutely unbearable, and the singing, yelling, dancing, the din which rent the air nightly prevented the residents from closing an eyelid. Baruch Batlan was the first to look for other accommodations. He eventually had a house built in the street where the shul was, and was very happy when he and his family were finally able to move out of that building and move into his new home. Baruch used to visit his teacher Rabbi Yoel Bal Shem once every 3 years, and he always stayed at the home of his master, the Baal Shem of Zamuch, for several weeks. So now, on his next trip, he told Rabbi Yoel about the haunted house of the departed goldsmith, which had been the cause of his having to move out. The Baal Shem wanted Baruch to tell him what kind of man the goldsmith had been. Having lived in his house for 30 years, Baruch naturally was able to tell the Baal Shem all he wanted to know about the deceased. Avigdor Tuvia, you'll recall that was the name of the goldsmith, had had a satisfactory income from the rent he collected from his seven tenants, and in addition he dealt in jewelry, buying up all kinds of trinkets from women and selling them to the wives of nobles or other rich non-Jewish customers. Baruch added that although the goldsmith was far from refined and used foul language, he was nevertheless very open-handed, very generous, and a Baal Tzedakah. Buell now wanted to know what kind of a woman the goldsmith's wife, Gitel, was. Baruch was glad to tell him that she too was very good-hearted. She used to belong to all the societies for helping distressed people, the Society for Aiding Poor Girls to Get Married, Hachnosas Kala, the Society for Helping Poor Wayfarers, and mostly she helped in the Society for Looking After Poor Mothers Who Just Had Children. But she, too, was not very refined in her manner of or speech. Curses rose steadily to her lips, especially against selfish or mean people. "May the devil get you" was a favorite expression of hers when angry. Her curses were well known in Poznan, and people trembled before them, for it was believed that when Gittel cursed, her curses materialized. Even during her charitable work, she did not hesitate to give vent to her curses if anything or anyone displeased her. And so it was said that if she cursed a mother in childbirth, that woman would not live long, and if it was a bride she cursed, there would be no good fortune in that house. The Baal Shem listened to it all without making any comment. But when Baruch Batlan came to say goodbye, Rabbi Yoel then referred to the matter of the new tenants in the house of the late goldsmith. Rabbi Yoel said, "As Avigdor Tuvia and his wife Gittel died childless, their children having died in their youth, their house now belongs to their next of kin. He must now be approached and persuaded to turn it into a Beis HaMedrash. Only in this way will it be possible to drive out the ghosts and demons from the haunted house." Rabbi Yoel instructed Baruch as to how it should be done. 10 of Rabbi Yoel's Talmidim in Poznan, Baruch among them, Rabbi Baruch Batlan among them, were to fast that following Sunday and read Vayichal. They were to read in the Torah the section of Vayichal, which is read on Etonis on a fast day. They were to spend the next night in Torah study. Next morning they were to go to the mikveh and then enter the synagogue, the shul, where they were to take the Sifrei Torah wrapped in talasim, each to be carried by two Jews. Thus they would march in double file, carrying the Sifra Torah, and followed by the whole minion until they reached the goldsmith's house. Here, they were to stop in front of the door and call out to the unworthy spirits to leave the house and make way for the Holy Torah. They should then open the door, enter, and recite certain chapters of Tehillim, even if those unclean spirits had not yet left. Services, davening, should then be arranged three times a day. Also, shiurim and learning, Torah, for young and old. Then everything will surely be in order, concluded the Baal Shem. When Baruch Batlan returned home, he learned that the unholy spirits occupying the goldsmith's apartment had gone from bad to worse. And now, not only did they indirectly disturb their neighbors at night with their dreadful noises, but they now set out deliberately to frighten their neighbors with all manner of ghastly tricks. These neighbors were at their wits' end to know what to do, and they all decided that the only solution would be for them to find rooms and apartments or houses elsewhere. And so, one by one, they all left the house. Every night, a crowd of Jews and non-Jews would gather around the house and listen to the awful sounds emanating from the house that came to their ears. The actual tenants, as mentioned, had become worn out through their sleepless nights and terror. The mayor of Poznan at that time was a strictly religious Christian, friendly in his attitude to the Jews. When the story of these unholy ghosts reached his ears, he could hardly believe it, and decided to go and investigate the matter himself. And so it was that one evening the mayor went along to Portugal Street, and the sound of yelling, screaming, clapping of hands, and drunken singing reached his ears as he approached the house of the goldsmith. He recoiled in horror and being a devout Catholic, hurried away to see the bishop to ask him to give a special prayer so that these awful tenants of the goldsmith house should leave it and depart from the town. The bishop then called together his priests, and they all prayed together in church, after which they all walked in procession, carrying flags, crosses, and so-called holy pictures right up to the house of the goldsmith. When they reached the house, they assembled in front of the late Avigdor Tuvia's apartment, sprinkled, so to say, holy water on the walls, while the priests closed their eyes and murmured a prayer. This particular apartment, which had belonged to the goldsmith, and which he and his wife had lived, was on the first floor, and had four windows facing the street. As the procession of clergy were in the middle of their prayers, just facing these windows, the four windows were suddenly flung open, and terrible faces thrust out, so frightening in their expressions, and so horrible and blood-curdling were the sounds that several priests fainted right out, and even the bishop stood there horror-struck, unable to say a word. Many of the bystanders who had gathered around to see what was going on fled in terror. The story, with its horrible details, quickly spread throughout the town. When Baruch Batlan heard about it, he told the heads of the Jewish congregation what the Baal Shem of Zamoch had advised in order to rid themselves of unholy spirits. They then invited the heir of the goldsmith's house to discuss the matter with him, and they succeeded in persuading him to give them the apartment of the late Avigdor Tuvia to be used as a Beis HaMedrash and be named after him and his wife Gittel, that should be known as Avigdor Tuvia and Gittel's Beis HaMedrash, House of Prayer. Baruch and nine other disciples of the Baal Shem then undertook to carry out all that their leader had recommended in order to consecrate the new Beis HaMedrash. When these 10 followers of the Baal Shem, after fasting and going to the mikveh and the preparations that the Baal Shem had told them to make, walked from the shul, carrying the 3 Sifrei Torah wrapped in talasim, they were followed by hundreds of men and women, Jews and non-Jews alike, all eager to see what would now happen. The procession duly arrived at the door of the apartment, and the noise that greeted them seemed more terrifying than ever before. Everybody in the crowd trembled with fear. But the 10 chosen men remained unafraid as they continued to carry out their master's instructions. They called out 3 times that the holy unholy spirits should leave the house and make room for the holy Sifrei Torah, the holy scrolls of the Torah. But when the noises from within the house did not abate, the 2 foremost, those 2 leading the procession, you'll recall that 2 Jews were to hold on to 1 Sefer Torah, these 2 hurled themselves at the door and broke it down. No sooner had the Jews with the scrolls of the Torah entered the apartment and crossed the threshold than the sound of breaking glass was heard. Every pane of glass in the windows was broken as there appeared the weirdest collection of creatures imaginable. All were black as the night and had wings which flapped as they flew through the windows, emitting blood-curdling shrieks in their wild eagerness to escape with their lives. They left a sickening smell in the room which they had just occupied, and a stinking smoke filled the atmosphere. But as soon as the minion entered the room, the smoke disappeared, taking the smell with it. The whole town buzzed with the news of this miracle wrought through the power of the holy Baal Shem of Zamoch. The mayor heard of it, and so did the bishop. They and everyone now spoke with the greatest respect of the Baal Shem and the wonder of his achievement. The opponents of the Baal Shem in Kabbalah, even now, did not change their attitude. Especially so in the case of the well-known scholar Shlomo Moshe, who was, as a matter of fact, one of the tenants in the Goldsmith House, and he, of all people, should have been glad to acknowledge what a splendid favor the Baal Shem Tov had done them in ridding them of those awful spirits. But he insisted that it was just a coincidence that those queer creatures had left when the Baal Shem Tov's Talmidim, when the Baal Shem's disciples had assembled there. There was nothing supernatural about it, in his opinion, and had no possible connection with the powers claimed for the Baal Shem. For 6 weeks, everything went along smoothly. But all at once, a terrible commotion was heard from the cellar where the firewood was stocked. Those awful creatures were back there, and a loud barking of dogs and other noises filled the air. It now transpired that when the heir had written over the apartment for use as a Beis HaMedrash, he had forgotten to include the cellar in the written agreement. The heir was then called, and he rewrote the agreement, this time including the lower parts of the house as belonging to the Beis HaMedrash. But this did not help at all, and the pandemonium below went on as before. The neighbors, who had already enjoyed the relief of the departure of the creatures, whom they had hoped they would never see nor hear again, were now terrified to find them back in the house, worrying them and frightening them so that they had no peace neither by day nor by night. The town began talking again about the return of these unholy spirits, which, though not daring to show themselves in the Beis HaMedrash, in the converted apartment which had become a Beis HaMedrash, nevertheless made enough nuisances of themselves in the lower floors of the house, in the basement. Shlomo Moshe, though an equal sufferer with the other tenants in the house, who again got no sleep at nights, was quite delighted at the outcome. Had he not insisted all along that their horrible neighbors had just chanced to leave when they did, and that had nothing whatever to do with any of the so-called powers of the Baal Shem? Here was the proof of it, for here were those awful creatures back again, despite all the Baal Shem's, what Shlomo Moshe called magical intervention. Shlomo Moshe, together with the other opponents of the Baal Shem, was even more bitter than before in his opposition to and criticism of the Baal Shem of Zamuk and the other Mekubalim. The other tenants in the house, not being as fanatically biased as Rav Shlomo Moshe, stated their decision of going to Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem and appealing to him to come personally and complete the noble work begun on his instructions by his disciples, for they could not stand the disturbances and fright any longer. Rav Shlomo Moshe and his friends were furious at this suggestion, and they said they would fight tooth and nail to prevent anyone from committing such a foolishness. No, they said, this was even worse than the foolishness, they claimed. It was nothing less than a crime against Judaism. The bitter opponents of the Baal Shem set up such a hue and cry that his disciples, the Talmidim Baal Shem of the city, began to feel that maybe it would not be right to bring their master to Poznan in case it might cause a Pesach HaKovid, it might belittle his dignity because of the furious opposition by these few fanatics. Meanwhile, something happened which stirred up the town anew, and which caused Rav Shlomo Moshe to change his mind. What exactly happened, God willing, in the next installment.